Hello, and welcome to the Sam Knows podcast. I'm Barry Collins. When a site as big as Facebook falls off the internet, it's headline news.
Some breaking news on Facebook. Julia Boston.
Facebook responding to the latest on the outages, saying in a tweet from CTO Mike Schroepfer, saying sincere apologies to everyone impacted by outages of Facebook-powered services right now.
Facebook isn't the only major website to suffer significant downtime in 2021. Various outages have dragged down sites such as Amazon, Reddit, and even the UK government website, often caused by the most innocuous of errors as a centralized content distribution network, or CDN. What are the knock-on effects when a major site such as Facebook goes down? What's causing these failures? And should we be worried that the internet isn't as robust as it's often portrayed? Joining me to discuss all of these issues is Sam Knows founder and CTO, Sam Crawford. So Sam, what effect does it have on the internet as a whole when huge sites like Facebook or WhatsApp and Instagram go down?
Sure. So there's quite a few effects. So before we go into that, I think it's worth, as we're going to talk about DNS in the answer, that I think it's worth reiterating that DNS was a symptom of the Facebook outage, and it wasn't the cause. The cause was BGP, or rather the fact that Facebook effectively took all of their routers offline and stopped announcing their presence on the internet. And obviously that affected the ability of DNS requests to reach Facebook's DNS servers as well. Mm-hmm. Now, that leads us on to the topic of DNS quite nicely. So there were some quite nice charts publicized online from some fairly major DNS operators. I think Cloudflare was one of them, that showed that they saw a huge increase in DNS traffic during the Facebook outage. The reason for this is because you have all of these clients out on the internet, so web browsers, apps on phones, web pages with Facebook advertising beacons embedded inside them, and so on. All of these are relying on Facebook.com or, you know, WhatsApp.net or Instagram.com existing. And when they're trying to resolve that, they will contact their DNS server, and DNS server will, you know, 99 times out of 100, or, you know, more like 99.999 times out of 100, it will return the response immediately from a cache directly inside the DNS server. In this case, the caches is all expired, and the request had to go back to the authoritative Facebook name servers, but those were unresponsive. So you had all of these requests from millions and millions of clients all being queued up, trying to reach the Facebook DNS servers, which were, of course, just it was just going into the void. Nothing was being returned. So what this meant is that all of the DNS servers around the globe, so your ISP's ones, and then the big shared ones like Google and Cloudflare and Cloud9 and others, they became much, much busier simply because they were trying to satisfy all of these requests, and they were trying to go back to Facebook for the answer, and they were not getting anything. So they just had lots more outstanding pending requests waiting. And this had a knock-on effect on other completely innocent DNS traffic, which happened to be taking place at the same time. So what these charts from Cloudflare and others show is that the sheer weight of Facebook's outage had knock-on effects on DNS traffic for completely unrelated websites, I don't know, like bbc.co.uk, for example. And this would have manifested itself to an end user as a website taking longer to load, or something else happening. So people then incorrectly attributed the Facebook outage to causing congestion on the rest of the internet, but really DNS was the knock-on effect, which had the effect of making everything seem to be slower. And of course, I guess there were some secondary effects as well. We haven't seen those publicized so much, that other websites will have become busier because the traffic that would have gone to Facebook, the attention, the eyeballs that would have gone to Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp, is now probably going elsewhere. People are now looking at the BBC or Hacker News or something else like that. These websites would have suffered a bit under the load as well.
And presumably when a site such as Facebook goes down, people sit there hitting the enter button repeatedly because they can't believe it's down. So that creates more problems.
Yes, modern web browsers are quite good at actually defending against that kind of thing. But still, you still have a lot of DNS requests, which are just they have to go to a DNS server, and they will, and the DNS server has to wait for the reply. And if it doesn't get a reply, then it returns an error to the user. But in the whole time, it has to hold the connection open to the user, and that uses resources. And I think the one thing I haven't mentioned so far is. Facebook has quite a lot of advertising beacons embedded in web pages, you know, sharing buttons and so on. These are also served from Facebook.com. So these can have the effect of slowing down or making other pages appear to stall or delay whilst Facebook is offline.
How quickly do you see a problem yourself with SamKnow's own measurements when something big like the Facebook outage happens?
Pretty quickly. We have specific tests for Facebook, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, WhatsApp, and then lots of services within those as well, like image sharing, text sending, text retrieval, and so on. And these run from so many devices globally, so white boxes, routers, phones in the future, that we can see that we can effectively see an outage within seconds. Of course, we usually want to wait a minute or two to have some certainty that the outage is not localized to one particular ISP or part of the world or country. You want to make sure you gather enough data from enough vantage points around the world to confirm it is actually a global Facebook outage and not just a localized one. So in hindsight, it's really easy to look at the data and say, yes, it happened at that exact second. But when you're in the middle of it, you're thinking, surely there must be a problem on my side. The entirety of Facebook doesn't just drop offline. And there was an amusing anecdote from Cloudflare's CTO who basically said the same thing on Twitter. When they first spotted the Facebook outage, they assumed it was a problem with their DNS servers, and they raised a high-profile ticket internally within Cloudflare to say none of the Facebook services are resolving. And then it was only after a couple of minutes that they realized actually everything was fine on their side, and it was Facebook that was offline.
We've seen a few of these recent outages where big sites such as Facebook and Amazon and BBC have gone down temporarily. Has the internet become too dependent on a few big services or CDNs?
That is a tricky one. So I think from a technology point of view, on the CDNs and the tier one ISPs, and by tier one ISPs, I mean like the level threes of the world, Cogent, Hurricane Electric, transit ISPs. Mm-hmm. The popular opinion is yes, things are too centralized, but I don't really think that is the case. And the reason is this: there's multiple CDNs and tier one ISPs that you can buy services from. No single one is truly dominant. And if you really want to, you can host your website on multiple CDNs. It's not as common as people would like you to believe it is, because it's actually quite complex, and error prone itself, but you could do. So if the alternative is to go back to the old days of the early, you know, the late 90s or the early 2000s, where before the AWSs of the world and before other cloud hosting services, where everyone has their own rack or server in a data center, which creates a single point of failure and also a lot of waste and a lot of redundancy, then to be honest, I'd rather stick with the current setup. As long as there's multiple players and there's competition and market effects are doing their job, then I'm pretty happy with how things are going at the moment. And of course, maybe in the future, decentralization will improve this even further with technologies like IPFS, for example. But when it comes to, if we move away from the technology aspect and we look at individual content providers, when it comes to people like Facebook, I think this is less of a technology issue and more of a competition one. I think nowadays, if Facebook tried to buy Instagram or WhatsApp, it would probably be blocked by, I don't know, the FTC in the US on competition grounds. But Facebook has plenty of competitors these days, probably actually way more competitors than they did 5 or 10 years ago, with people like TikTok and Signal in the messaging space, and even more upstarts as well. So in short, I don't think it has grown too centralized yet. It is a concern, but I think the other thing to mention is that centralization generally helps with scalability. Mm-hmm. Running something which is truly decentralized is very, very hard to very, very hard to scale. I mean, Bitcoin's a good example of that. The potential transaction rate on that is very, very poor because of its truly decentralized nature, which is why you see lots of other competing cryptocurrencies which are perhaps more centralized but have a much, much, much higher potential transaction rate.
Where do you think the biggest weak spots are these days in internet infrastructure?
I think it's actually remarkably resilient at the moment. I think it's amazing that after such a huge outage, it only takes a short amount of time for everything to come back online. Mm-hmm. But if I had to point to a few things, there's a few obvious candidates. So BGP is one which everyone is pointing to at the moment. The weaknesses there is not like the Facebook issues. That was human error. Such things will happen. The weaknesses with BGP is that there's still a lot of trust involved. If I'm a small ISP and I'm just accepting routes or BGP advertisements from my upstream provider, then I'm just trusting that what they say is the truth. Mm-hmm. There's quite frequently BGP misconfigurations, which leads to some major websites being accidentally rerouted to some small little business in the middle of Iowa, for example. You see all kinds of quirks like that occasionally. There are mechanisms to prevent that, but they're still not super widely adopted. It doesn't happen super frequently. I think there's two other aspects which spring to mind. One is the centralized nature of the SSL or TLS certificate trust stores. So on your on every device, so your computer, your phone, my computer, phone, whatever, there's a list of SSL root certificate authorities, and all trust in secure websites is chained back from those routes. If one of those root certificate authorities is hijacked, or even the intermediates, because there is an intermediate layer within that as well, then any of those certificate authorities can issue a certificate for any website in the world. So if somebody hijacked a certificate authority which your computer trusts, then they can issue an SSL, a valid SSL certificate for, I don't know, whitehouse.gov, for example, mm-hmm. or barclays.co.uk. That is not a solved problem. So that's, I think, a weak spot. And the last one, I think, is not technical at all. I think it's political. When you have countries, which we've seen increasingly in recent years, will just cut off access to the internet entirely because they have centralized internet gateways in their countries, which effectively gives the government the ability to shut off access as and when they want to, and also shut off access to individual services. So, and obviously we're all familiar with the Great Firewall of China and mm-hmm. All of the stuff that can do.
Given that sites such as Google, Facebook, Amazon must be under constant attack, are you surprised that these services are resilient as they are, that they're not knocked down more often?
In a word, yes. I think it's very, very impressive. If you think back to the first 4 or 5 years of Twitter, and there, I think the fail whale was a very common occurrence, and you mm-hmm. had MySpace as well was really struggling to stay online back then. I mean, these sites nowadays, like the Facebooks of the world and the modern day Twitters, are probably handling 1,000 times the traffic, or many tens of thousands of times the traffic, and an outage is almost unheard of. So yes, I think it is incredibly impressive that they are so resilient.
And in fact, most of the major outages we've seen in recent times, such as the Fastly and the Akamai outages, seem to be caused by configuration errors and just mistakes at the sort of host end, if you like. Is that a surprise? Do you think that the system should have weeded those kind of errors out?
I think there's a bit of confirmation bias going on here. So there's in the Fastly case, for example, it wasn't a configuration error. There was a bug on in the software on their side in their administration panel, as I understand it, which was triggered by somebody making a customer making a configuration change, which took the whole thing offline. But yep. That was clearly a bug rather than a human error. The human making the change didn't do anything wrong. It triggered a bug on Fastly's side. But yes, the other more recent changes or outages this year have been as a result of human error. I think the thing we don't think about is that these massive services are making thousands or tens of thousands or possibly even hundreds of thousands of changes every day. So spinning up servers, taking down servers, connecting new networks to their network, bringing new services online. It's an ever-changing environment on these hyperscale services that have million plus servers on their network. The fact that we, 99.999% of those are completely unnoticed by us and work perfectly and are flawless. Mm-hmm. So with that many changes going on every day, I think it's kind of inevitable that even if that we're going to see an error at some point. I think the surprise from the Facebook one was that it just took so long to recover from. I think the others were generally much faster, only an hour or so.
That's it for this month's podcast. Make sure to check out the full article at samknows.com. Until next time, goodbye.